Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day. Darren McFarland here representing the south side of town down here in Rutherford County. Willie Donick over on the east side in East Nashville. Chase McCabe on the west side in Bellevue. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike. And now in East Nashville, East Tennessee.
Is he in town?
No. Vince is not in town. Not that I know of. Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal, WNML, at Vince Sports on Twitter, is on the line with us. Vinny, how you doing?
I'm good. I don't know about all this boredom that everyone is talking about. I mean, I have plenty to do, but it's good to be good to be on with you guys. And how about that technology today, where a show can be pieced together from five different locations here in this segment?
Yeah, that's right. So you're not bored? You're not? You've been busy?
Yeah, I had a long, long work and personal to-do list that I probably never would have even gotten to had we been in the normal postseason basketball, baseball, spring football practices every other day, that kind of madness during that time period. So there's still plenty that I'm catching up on with work, and then obviously still some on air that I'm doing, and then hosting the MMA show each week, and then I do a lot for our station website, social media, and all that. So that has enhanced even more during this period. So, and working out at home and just getting a lot of personal stuff that I hadn't had a chance to get to, working on that a little bit as well. So good balance of everything, and just keep going, and hope we do get back to normal for sure.
So I asked you last week if Jeremy Pruitt had talked, and he really had not talked, but it was after when we spoke to you that he did speak on Vol calls on the Vol network. And so what did Jeremy Pruitt have to say?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that he said that, look, this is much bigger than football. He's like, he talked about how the guys that would love to be practicing right now, but this is about, this country and making sure that everybody is healthy. So that was the biggest message. He didn't come across as overly concerned about, missing spring practice. You know how coaches are. They always want to be there practicing with their guys and being around them. But I think they're able to do more in terms of contacting them. Not everybody can do the same things based on their home situation. So, he has a lot of returning players, guys that still need to get better. But I think he is thinking about more of the big picture. At least that's the way he came across, thinking more about the big picture and getting everybody healthy. And when everybody's ready to go, then let's do this, and then they'll be full on, as opposed to, kind of just putting your foot in the water, your toe in the water a little bit and kind of easing into it. I think he wants to keep everybody away and safe right now. Then when we're ready to go, we're getting after it like we did before, and we'll see if that plays out. But that was just the biggest thing, was him saying that, look, football, we can wait right now. We got to get this under control first.
Well, it's actually refreshing to hear a big-time football coach or a coach at a big-time program say that, because that's called perspective. I mean, how many times have we heard, big-time coaches – that have great resumes and have done a whole lot of winning, and they've been very successful, and they're kind of top the coaching mountain in whatever sport they're involved in. Just seem like they live in an absolute cave or a bubble and have no clue about the real world. And so it's actually refreshing to hear a coach at a big program, say something that people can relate to.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And look, it's not that hard to view things that way. So it's just a matter of verbalizing it. And it was good that everybody got a chance to hear from him, because we hadn't. And, UT wanted, when they had the press conference with the coaches, they wanted to keep it to the spring and winter sports. So I understand that. And if, and all the focus would have been on Pruitt and not on all those other coaches doing those spring sports. So they knew that he was going to be on Vol calls. He'd have an opportunity to talk to fans and get the message out there. So I think it worked out well.
Daryl Taylor, I know, was on WNML with you guys and talking about kind of his draft prep and the interview. What did he say in that interview when he was on your station that stood out to you?
Well, he's
talking about last season, too.
Right, exactly. He does work just like a lot of athletes. They're doing work from home. He's doing a lot of, mainly he said he's doing a lot of push-ups. With guys right now, it's hard. He is spending, everybody's in a different situation. Taylor is still recovering from his off-season procedure. So he's still doing rehab. In fact, that's where he's spending a lot of time, is at his rehab facility. So this is actually an opportunity for him to get healthy. And so other guys, they're missing out on opportunities to really show what they can do or run 40s or, you know, catch the ball at pro days and things like that. He's using this as a chance to get healthy and hope that his tape speaks for itself. I think teams are viewing him a lot of different ways. He mentioned that some teams look at him and the teams that he had talked to, I think he was actually on a visit. He mentioned he was on a visit with the Arizona Cardinals when they told everyone he needed to get off the road, no more visits, and you know, with teams. So he was visiting with the Cardinals, and he mentioned that some teams view him as a 4-3 outside linebacker and others as a 3-4 end. So it just depends. Excuse me, a 3-4 outside linebacker or a 4-3 defensive end. He split time between those two at Tennessee getting after the passer. I think he is a little bit more effective with his hand down than standing up. I don't think he quite has the same explosiveness rushing the passer from that stand-up spot. I mean, he did fine in those positions, but I'm interested to see what kind of teams like his talent. He's a guy that really shows a lot of ability and skill, but it's just a matter of do they think they could coach out the productivity that his body, his athleticism tells you he can get. So I think that he also mentioned, because he's up in Virginia, and he mentioned the New York Giants were his favorite team growing up. And the New York Giants now have his former linebacker coach in Kevin Shearer, and now former strength and conditioning coach Craig Fitzgerald is with the Giants. So there's some connections there. You wonder if maybe they'll be lobbying for Taylor in the draft as well. So those are a couple of the notable things. Getting healthy was the biggest thing.
Yep. They're having takeovers on SEC Network in these times. This is what you have to do. UT had their takeover on the SEC Network. What'd you think? I know you took it in.
Well, first I was reminded at the fact that we're all in social distancing because I was able to watch almost all of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a sobering reality. I'm like, normally I'd catch up on this on DVR months later, but the TV is on all the time. But so that was one. Another thing was, gosh, you're reminded at just how wild that Taxslayer Gator Bowl was.
Yes.
And improbable. I think the stat was there were 471 games, something like that, where a team was down 13 points in the final 5 minutes and they were 0-for in terms of coming back and winning until Tennessee came back on Indiana. Just the highs and the lows of that game. And it also was a reminder of during their 6-game win streak that there were some ugly moments still in those games. I mean, it's not like they just started rolling people. There were still, even games they ended up winning, going away, there were some bad plays there, but they just had this ability to shake off bad plays and just keep going. And so I don't know if that's a characteristic of Jeremy Pruitt, that they have adapted from their coach or what. But that's a very useful trait to have, is to shrug off the bad plays and just keep going. And they somehow found ways to make plays. And the way that game went from bad Garantano to briefly Maurer to Garantano able to make enough plays down the stretch to where they came back and then that onside kick. But then you saw that in some of their other games that we saw on the takeover also. Just a strange football season that ended up with Tennessee somehow getting things right. And when they got right, when they played well, even in stretches, it was pretty good. And it is promising moving forward.
More with Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal in Knoxville on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And John Deere Green, on a hot summer night, he wrote Billy Bob Loves Charlene.
Continuing our conversation here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. From over on the eastern part of the state, Vince Ferrara joins
Shout
us.
Shout out
for
to
his
some
wheelie
Joe Diffie,
check.
Elijah. Good job.
Yes, there you go, Chase. So, Vince, I've noticed a couple articles circulating on just some doctor's perspectives on this website called Vols Wire. I'm curious if it's reached you at all in any way, but there's a couple doctors that this Dan Harrelson, has interviewed, just talking about some of the issues that could affect football season. But there's a possibility that this, you know, the virus, when the weather gets colder, could reoccur, and therefore, especially from the NCAA standpoint, they are discussing, you know, how much football can you have? Will the football season possibly be affected by what's going on? I think all of us in our mindset just trying to get through these next couple of months and looking at spring sports. But have you talked about this in your circles at all?
No, haven't seen that. No, Dan, but I haven't seen that. I mean, obviously what a lot of people are reacting to, I think, nationally is what Kirk Herbstreit said in an interview recently, that he would be stunned, I think was the word he used, for if the NFL plays, and would be very surprised, something to that effect, if we have college football, basically not really optimistic for any sort of football in the fall. You know, it's so difficult to say. I just think any of that kind of discussion is either hope or the possibility. You know, there's just so much unknown that it's hard to say. Now, are we looking at the reality of possibly some sort of adjustment to football? Sure, but to think that how difficult it would be to play football, I just think that's, you know, taken aside, and, you know, maybe taking the standpoint of, hey, I'm going to be pessimistic and hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised, or, you know, overly optimistic just for the sake of being overly optimistic. So I don't know the specifics on that there, but I don't expect to have any sort of contact in the spring. And, you know, what they do, if we're at a point where they can bring players back for practices, I think they'll do it when when we're good, and then take those into account. And I'd like to see the NCAA really show some leadership when it comes to that, but do it in the right way, rather than leaving practices and the contact and the risk reward up to each conference. This is a period of time that needs leadership, and maybe during all this, it'll show that college football needs some sort of leadership to where we can be uniform and have real leadership when it's needed, instead of just always deferring to individual conferences. So whether that'll happen or not, I don't know, but I think that's what they're going to need to do, is make sure that across the board, here's when you can return to practice, here's when it's safe, rather than leaving it open.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to check out, and we'll probably talk about it on our show at some point, what Dan Harrelson has written about it, just, you know, getting the perspective from some of the doctors that I guess are in talks with the NCAA about how to proceed and some of the potential issues that could affect football season, obviously, and all sports in the fall. So, Vince, let me ask on a couple of things here. I know Major League Baseball, we were discussing this, just the domino effect of the fact that the draft is only going to be five rounds this year. You have a number – we know that high school seniors who are baseball players that are some of them probably are already committed, but there are a lot of ones that are, you know, hoping to have a great senior season and get the attention of somebody and latch on to a college roster. You've got juniors that were hoping to get drafted, I'm sure, on the Tennessee team, seniors who might have a chance to come back. So specifically how it affects Tennessee baseball, all of these things, what are your thoughts on the Tennessee roster?
Well, obviously, Willie, as you know, that this can go a lot of different ways based on what that D1 council votes on and decides on in terms of giving eligibility relief. And to what extent do they give that eligibility relief? Do they just do it? Do they find a middle ground and just do seniors? There's so many things to account. Are they going to expand rosters? Are they going to change what the scholarship limit is? You can have 27 scholarship players, 35 total players, and there's that 25% minimum scholarship you have to offer, you have to give for those 27 players you have. Is that going to be increased? Can they do something with the 11.7? You mentioned then there's the high school players that are going to be coming into your university. Well, guess what? If there's fewer rounds, then there's going to be a lot more players decide to go to college rather than go into the draft. So now you're exactly. going to have fewer kids departing for Major League Baseball on the front end coming in, and then on the back end you're going to have more staying. So how do you manage those rosters? It is very difficult. I want to see again what the NCAA does to help this issue out. My concern is because baseball doesn't get, I think, typically the attention and the necessary tools that it normally does when it operates without this. I'm afraid that baseball is going to get the short end of the stick again, and there's going to be some sort of middle ground, and and costs for a lot of these schools are going to come into play. Remember the three assistant rule, where all the major conferences, pretty much a lot of them, wanted the third assistant coach rule, where there were a lot of schools that didn't want that extra cost, where they thought it was only going to help the big boys like the SEC. So it was voted down, and I think they're going to look at this, and people are going to start thinking about cost involved when they're already losing money in other areas. So it's very complicated. In terms of Tennessee, I think there are four players that have a chance to be drafted even with a shortened draft. Garrett Crochet, first round. Alaric Solari, probably is second, third round. D1 Baseball has him a second round. Jackson Leith, who was outstanding as a JUCO, as a right-hander this year, he's projected by D1 Baseball as a fourth rounder. And then Zach Daniels, who had a great junior year to start the season going into conference play, he's projected by D1 Baseball as a sixth rounder. So he's within the range. So I think you're going to have some of those guys that are just going to have the decisions on what the money is, but I think you're likely to lose Crochet at least, and then the rest will just depend on the slot and what the money is for them. It's a very complicated system set up that they're potentially looking at. It just depends on how much help they give for those rosters to those teams. But I think Tennessee, because they don't have a lot of seniors, I think they probably won't be as hurt by this as maybe some schools could be.
I think as all that you say, Vince, I think college baseball, as we know it, is going to change because of this and the fact that Major League Baseball is in the process of looking at eliminating something like 40 or 42 minor league teams, which I hope doesn't happen, but it seems like there's a lot of leverage and momentum for this. Just think about 42 teams worth of players that largely would make up guys that could otherwise play college baseball, what that would do to college baseball. I hope that maybe they can get more scholarships at least, but that's a question for down the road. Let me ask you, you spoke to Jordan Bowden of Tennessee about dealing with the whole COVID-19. Like here, Saban Lee decided he's going to go and test the waters for the NBA draft. It looks like he's not going to come back to school, but there's a lot of players that whose career suddenly ended, and now where do they go?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing, he actually did a video teleconference with a lot of us, especially in the local media, last week. And the most interesting thing is he was asked, hey, we don't know what they're going to do with the fall, with the winter sport eligibility, but if you were given the opportunity to come back another year, would you do so? And he didn't hesitate to say he didn't want to make a declaration, but he said, I would love to come back. I'd have to talk about it with my family, but yeah, I'd be interested in coming back. So I thought that was interesting. He's always a very positive kid. So, you know, he said it's tough trying to find places to work out. It's not like the NBA players where, you know, some of those guys have courts at their, you know, big mansions. You know, these kids don't have that opportunity. So they're just looking for places to be able to work on their game and stay in shape, not even knowing what's going to happen in terms of the draft or anything like that. So it's just kind of up in the air, staying positive and continuing to work out best he can. I thought it was interesting, too, him talking about the SEC tournament being there, because remember Tennessee and Alabama were there and they were getting ready to play, and then it was nixed. And he mentioned that Rick Barnes was the one that kind of told them, hey, this is real. You guys need to really take this seriously. He told them that he was surprised that they didn't cancel it the night before. They did on Thursday. So, but he's a very positive kid. I don't know that he will land in the NBA. His season, just the shooting percentage, just, you know, the productivity wasn't there, but he's super athletic and he's a great kid. So, we'll see what happens with him, but he's got teammates that talk about the NBA with him that are there right now.
Staying on the basketball front, Vince, I know they got a transfer in. Tell us more about him.
Yeah, EJ Anasicki, who is the brother of Nikki Anasicki, who played for Pat Summitt. And EJ talked about how, you know, he'd always dreamed of playing at Tennessee. He was around the University of Tennessee all the time because his sister played at UT. So he was very familiar with UT. And I think that was really beneficial because these kids aren't able to go and visit schools when they're transferring. So the University of Tennessee was something that he had always dreamed of playing, coming, transferring as a grad transfer from Sacred Heart, where he was a double-double guy, 16 points, 12 rebounds. And he's got a big frame, 6'6", 6'7", much needed for Tennessee, and getting a guy that can score on the low block, another forward. If he's tall enough to really make an impact, I think as a grad transfer, ideally you would have liked to have someone with a little bit more size. But they got size in Uroš Plavšić, and he wasn't able to get on the court. So you need to be able to play more so than have the size. So Rick Barnes loved them. They beat out a bunch of really good schools for him, like Gonzaga and Louisville and Wake and Georgia, a bunch of others. So he was coveted in the market. And the fact that he couldn't go around and visit those schools if he hadn't been on their campus, and he knew Tennessee, what it was all about, he didn't need to visit Tennessee. He could make an educated guess on it. And he's a hard worker, and he fits the characteristics of what Rick Barnes looks for in a player. So I think it's a good pickup for Tennessee. It gives them another post option, especially offensively, which at times they really lacked in games where Fulkerson wasn't at his best.
You also did on 99.1, the sportsanimal.com, you had a list of 33 Vols that are currently on NFL rosters. What were some standouts from that list?
Well, Tyler Bray got him to 33. He was released by the Bears earlier in the offseason, and they brought him back. So he is, whether, you know, he'll be the third quarterback there or or how it'll shake out in the end, we'll see. But he's one that's back in the league 6 seasons. It's amazing that he's held on, even though he's only played in one game. You know, obviously Jason Witten moving from the Cowboys to the Raiders. Will be interesting to see how that plays out. There are the defensive line position is the most represented from the University of Tennessee, where there are 7 D linemen from UT in the league. A couple of teams have the most former University of Tennessee players. The Eagles and the Broncos both have 3 apiece. And, you know, there's a number of starters that have developed, including a wide receiver, where you have a couple of one-time Vols. That's a different list besides 33. There's a number of players that were once at Tennessee. There's 5 of them that don't even count towards the 33. There were one-time Vols that finished at different places, like a Jalen Hurd, a Preston Williams with the Miami Dolphins, who was great until he got injured and was out for the year. Hurd could end up being a starting wide receiver with the 49ers when he's healthy this year. They like his potential a lot. So I think there's going to be a pretty good representation of Tennessee players, and obviously one there in Jordan Williams with the Tennessee Titans trying to make the roster. He's bounced around to a lot of different teams and spent last year on injured reserve. So he's the one UT player on the Titans roster right now. So we'll see how it shakes out. But it's a pretty healthy list considering team hasn't had a ton of winning over the last 10 to 12 years, and obviously a number of those years not having anybody drafted. They'll have a few drafted this year, so they'll be added to that number also.
Vince, appreciate the visit as always. You have a safe week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, you guys do the same. Appreciate you guys.
Vince Ferrara, the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. He joins us every Monday starting at noon. You can follow him on Twitter at Vince Sports. It's free and easy. Just hit follow. That's all you have to do. When we come back, building your Nashville sports bucket list. We asked this on our at 1025 The Game Twitter account over the weekend. You need to pick 3. You've got a salary cap of $16. We will figure out an answer how the 3 of us, this was done after we were done with our show on Friday, so we didn't get a chance to weigh in. So we will weigh in on the other side. How would you build Nashville sports bucket list with these 3 categories and having $16 to spend? We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.